I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Waltz, as governor, removed informed consent policies in April 2023.
Governor Tim Walz's pro-abortion record. Reporter Gabrielle Edsel shares her insights on the vice presidential hopeful's anti-life advocacy.
When I pointed out to the students, I go, who told you these lies that you have to kill someone who is weaker than you, who's more vulnerable than you, because they're inconvenient in order for you to succeed?
Combating the false narrative that abortion empowers women, President of Students for Life of America, Kristen Hawkins, shares the encounters she's had with young Americans in hopes of enlightening their hearts with the truth about abortion.
That's what they abort. This little guy.
And the evils of abortion haven't changed. We look at Mother Angelica's timeless wisdom on the beauty of life and the realities of the pro-death industry.
Politics matters, guys. This is why we need to vote pro-life first in November.
Pro-life activist, speaker, and the president of Students for Life of America, Kristen Hawkins, is calling on Americans to vote pro-life first. The presidential elections are just around the corner, and the fight for life is at a critical point in the United States. The Republican Party has waned on the abortion issue. Republican vice president candidate J.D. Vance has openly supported access to the abortion pill. This while Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris is pushing extreme abortion ideology with no limits on abortion, even up to the moment of birth.
We'll stop Donald Trump's extreme abortion bans because we trust women to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do.
Harris has extensively reiterated the narrative of choice and freedom used by pro-abortionists during her pro-abortion tour across the United States as vice president. She is the first sitting vice president to visit an abortion clinic. Now, as the Democratic Party's official candidate, she continues her push for a so-called federal right to abortion and made it the center of her campaign. Despite the push by the Democratic Party to enshrine abortion as a right, pro-lifers continue to spread the message of truth that abortion is murder. Students for Life of America has boots on the ground across the United States working to educate Americans on abortion. The organization goes door to door and from college campus to college campus in hopes of combating the narrative of choice. I had the opportunity to sit down with the president of Students for Life of America, Kristen Hawkins, during the 14th annual summer conference of the Napa Institute. She shared her thoughts on the presidential election and her organization's work to urge America to vote pro-life.
Kristen, we're watching a new landscape evolve in politics. Obviously, the last couple of weeks have seen some very different choices made by both parties. I won't talk too much about the RNC yet. I want to talk about your work on campus because there's no coincidence in Vice President Harris's abortion tour that she's done on so many campuses and where we are today. Tell me a little bit about what you've done, knowing that that's something that she was doing.
Yeah, we actually sort of joke around Students for Life that she's following me on campuses. Some of the campuses she heads to are after I've been there. We're like, oh, there you go. Kamala's following the Instagram. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, indicative of the Democrats' strategy. Really, she has been the champion-in-chief of abortion for the Biden administration.
Some people have called her the abortion czar.
You can use that word as well. I mean, when she was a U.S. senator, she had 100% pro-abortion rating. When she was attorney general of California, I mean, she colluded directly with Planned Parenthood, her campaign benefactors, to target a pro-life journalist, one of our very good friends, David DeLeiden, who found and showed the world some of the gruesome work that Planned Parenthood does. So Kamala Harris, she's an abortion ideologue. And so when you think about where the Democrats want to go and who they're targeting, they want to send her out and they want to use her to schlep for votes. And really, it's sad because the message that she's bringing on college campuses isn't one of empowerment or hope. It's actually fear, and it's regressive. It's Republicans are going to take away your rights to control your bodies. interpretation, Republicans want to, or some Republicans, not all, I wish they all do, want to limit access to abortion to stop killing babies. And it's really interesting because she's using that to kind of gin up these young women that I get the privilege to speak to on campuses, who are scared, who've never lived in an America without legal abortion. And they've been told from abortion activists like Kamala Harris, like Nancy Pelosi, like Planned Parenthood, all their lives, that somehow their ability to achieve their career of their dreams, to finish out their education, it all rests on their rights to terminate, to end the life, pay someone to end the life of their child. And that's so sad. When I pointed out to the students, I go, who told you these lies that you have to kill someone who is weaker than you, who's more vulnerable than you, because they're inconvenient in order for you to succeed? That is the opposite of empowerment, what women's empowerment should be.
Yeah, and the idea that you would have to wound yourself in order to succeed, that you would have to carry this wound with you and be offered zero healing in order to have a successful career, or even to imagine having a family in a moment where you feel ready to have a family, where you feel called to have a family, which is, you know, as you know, very complicated as a mother yourself.
Yes.
I think you understand the realities of never being ready.
I do. There's never a perfect moment. I'll just say that.
So when you look at that targeting of this very specific demographic, this young vote, whose imagination was captured very much so by the Obama administration a long time ago without some of these extreme policies, was that intentional?
Well, when you look at the vote tallies from 2020, for example, Arizona, Georgia, I mean, these are states where 10 to 11, 15,000 votes determined the fate of our country. I mean, really, it came down to 40,000 votes, whether President Trump was going to be reelected or President Biden won. And so when you think about, you know, going to one college campus that has 15,000, 25,000 people on it, for Democrats, it's a good bang for their buck. And so that's what, you know, our Students for Life Action, our political arm, where we're getting these young people out to state legislatures, advocate for pro-life laws, door knocking. You know, that's the argument we're making, is we don't have to win over the entire youth vote, because we know when you look at the demographics, younger voters tend to vote more liberal, more progressive. But if we can just shift the youth vote 2 to 3 percentage points in a state, that changes everything. And that's why she's going to college campuses.
When you look at this idea of faith and science, right? How much of what you do on college campuses involves a discussion around faith, or is it just science because you know that the faith conversation is probably a no-go with young people?
Well, most people don't know this, but Students for Life America is actually a Judeo-Christian organization. We're a faith organization. But when we're on campuses, we present the argument from a secular human rights perspective. This is what science tells us about the creation of unique human life that's unrepeatable, and we believe you're valuable. And this is, by the way, how abortion is going to harm you. But I will tell you this, every comprehensive discussion you have about abortion always comes down to a fundamental question. What is it and why do I care? And that is the question, right? That's the religious, the metaphysical question of why do you have value and why does the child have value? And to be honest with you, that's been the most alarming thing I've seen on campuses. I'm on probably about 20 campuses a year, speaking, having events, training our students personally. I mean, our staff's there every day. But one of the things I've noticed since COVID is this willingness of young people who will come up to me and they'll start debating abortion. And I'll say, let's back up the conversation. Do you have value? And they'll look me in the eyes and say, no.
Wow.
And so then you have to stop the conversation and say, well, you know what, let's not talk about the baby that you have no relationship with. We need to first establish that you have value before you'll believe that this child has value. And that's a harder question. I mean, that's why, you know, at the Napa Institute, their theme this year was about what does it mean to be human? And that's so critical to this whole conversation. So, yes, you can start the pro-life discussion from a science, you know, logical perspective, but it always comes down to that metaphysical question of what is a human? And does a human being have value? Because if the child in the womb is a human and that human being has value, then there's no justification you can give for legal abortion.
Right. Let's just focus very quickly on the RNC, this move to soften their position on abortion. The VP pick, J.D. Vance, who
campaigned staunchly for issue one, for a no on issue one, to make sure that abortion was not protected in his state, and articulated a pro-life position, but is no longer really doing so. He's stumping for abortion pills in a way. Mm-hmm. Has that shift been something that you've had to call out on college campuses? Has it not affected anyone really in understanding the pro-life position?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the senator has always had a pro-life record. As you mentioned, he's a Catholic convert. He was very pro-life in his campaign. And then when he went on Meet the Press and said, oh, the Supreme Court legalized abortion pills, which one was incorrect. For a lawyer who's Yale graduated, I don't know what he was thinking. But it was interesting because that's not going to help him with young people, right? If I talk to a liberal voter on a college campus, they're going to say if abortion is their main reason for voting, they're not voting for Trump fans, no matter what they say about abortion, because Kamala Harris says that they are the reason Roe is reversed.
And that's right.
That's actually true.
She's the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that is not an accurate statement. What it does to those statements that Senator Vance has been making is it actually hurts the momentum on the pro-life movement, getting young people out to vote for him who are pro-life and being excited to campaign and do the hard thing that no young person wants to do, which is go talk to a random stranger about why they should vote for, you know, President Trump or Senator Vance. And so I think it's harmful. A lot of this is that inside the Beltway D.C. consultant mindset that has always been there in the Republican Party. I mean, it was there when I got to D.C. in 2005, surely. It just sort of, it kind of died down during the Obama years. But now it's back. And so you have these same old voices saying, step away, Republicans, from these divisive social issues. But that's not going to work. You cannot be an ostrich on abortion. Republicans can't do that because the, you know, Planned Parenthood and the abortion activists like Kamala Harris, they're bullies. They're going to talk about abortion. And if you as a Republican, and I tell, this is how I address Republican audiences all the time, if you put your head in the sand on the issue of abortion, the bully is going to chase you down and take you out. We teach our children, you know, you can ignore bullies, but then at a certain point, you have to stand up to the bully. You have to stand up for yourself. And that's the only way to stop the bully from coming after you. And that's what you have to do. I mean, and J.D. Vance did that when he was running for Senate. So I have no idea what he's doing right now. But we're encouraging him to stand strong and not buy into what the consultants are selling. You know, he has had a great platform as a U.S. senator on what we call the fourth trimester. How do we support mothers and families to feel that they can choose life despite the circumstances? And he has had a lot of great policy proposals and ideas, and we want to work with him in this, hopefully, a new administration. But we got to get elected first, and getting elected means we've got to make sure that Christians come out and vote, and they're excited to vote. And a little rain on election day doesn't stop them. But statements like that we saw, not only was it, logical and factually inaccurate, it actually hurts the very people he needs to get out to vote for him.
Super fast. You have young people who don't want to commit to any political party.
That's right.
And is there any hope for them when they look at, obviously, with the Democrats choosing Kamala, that makes them feel very much ostracized from choosing any other political party? What hope do they have if they want to be Christian first, studio Christian first, and political second?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously Christian first, right? We're Christian first above all things in our identity. But what we talk to young people about is, politics is never going to be perfect. There is no perfect political candidate. Jesus Christ is not on the ballot. And we are always going to be voting for imperfect people. But we have to look at the candidates who will reduce the amount of evil. Who will do the least amount of evil? Who will save the most lives? We have young people who aren't big Donald Trump supporters. They don't like his tweets or the things he said, or certainly some actions in his life before he was U.S. president. But we can look at his policies. We can look at what he did the first term. And I think you have to challenge young people to look critically at those facts. Don't just buy whatever you hear on CBS or what Planned Parenthood has put on Instagram or TikTok. You have to critically go and look at the facts. And when you have those conversations with young people, I mean, they always want the receipts, right? We don't even put a post on social media without linking to all the sources, because they're very savvy, right? They know the misinformation that's out there. And so give them the receipts, show them the facts, and they'll make the right decision. They don't like the late-term abortion. I mean, Kamala Harris, she is in line with about 10% of Americans who want abortion to be legal for whatever reason, up until the middle of birth, taxpayer funded. And if you're a Catholic or Christian who's working in the medical profession, you have to be willing to commit abortions or she wants you to get out. I mean, that is how extreme her position is. That's like 10% of Americans who agree with her. Our job as the pro-life movement now is to educate America on her extremism, because she doesn't want people to know what she really believes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You can learn more about Students for Life, their pro-life activism, and find out about events near you by visiting their website at studentsforlife.org. It's not just concerns over Harris's pro-abortion stance that have been voiced. Lee Sneed, fellow at the Catholic Association and contributor to the National Catholic Register, just wrote an article on what she calls Harris's anti-Catholic bias in the National Review.
Her thinly veiled attacks on the Knights of Columbus membership when she was, attacking judicial nominees for their membership in the charitable organization that's 2 million men strong across the world that does so many wonderful things. You know, she's also targeted pro-life journalists. She's targeted pregnancy crisis centers.
For further analysis on the Harris Walz ticket, we're joined now by Gabrielle Edsel, healthcare policy reporter for the Washington Examiner. Gabrielle, welcome to the show. How does the selection of Walz as VP affect the ticket on the issue of abortion, the Democrat ticket, of course?
Walz's candidacy for vice president is a very strong signal for Harris's Democratic base here on the issue of abortion. Harris's strongest issue is when she is communicating about abortion rights and reproductive health care in general. That's where when she struggles with a likability problem, a relatability problem. And when she's speaking about abortion, that's where she shines as the most authentic self. So choosing Walz is a strong complement to that. And he also has a much clearer track record on his overwhelming support for abortion rights in comparison to other candidates that were on the shortlist, like Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro.
Right. He has been called extreme on abortion. Well, how does his local leadership in Minnesota reflect what we could see should they win in November?
Walz has a very dogged stance when it comes to abortion. When he was reelected for governor in 2022, his state in the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate there as well instituted their fundamental right to abortion in January 2023, as soon as they came into the legislative session that year. They also took steps to that spring to attack crisis pregnancy centers, pregnancy resource centers, as well as protect doctors who provide abortions to patients out of state, as well as patients who come into the state of Minnesota from states that have abortion bans. So his administration in Minnesota has been centrally focused on the issue of abortion, and you can definitely see that come through in his promises for the vice presidency.
Is there anything that you can tell us about policies for children? I know that some have said that he has pushed the transgender agenda in his state as well.
Yes, he has, and it's becoming more and more clear that he's very much a progressive on all of these social issues with transgender care as well as abortion. But you can definitely see it most his policies. You can definitely see most of all that his progressive ideology really shines when it comes to unlimited abortion rights and a fundamental right to abortion.
Right, creating that right that doesn't necessarily exist, or at least we don't believe it exists. How do the policies that he promotes put women in danger when you're talking about domestic violence or human trafficking?
Sure. The main issue there, at least in my estimation, is the removal of informed consent policies. This is a major issue across the nation, but as well as in Minnesota. The Walz as governor removed informed consent policies in April 2023, and ultimately that means that patients aren't informed of potential complications, whether that's from the abortion pill pill mifepristone and misoprostol, or that the complications from a surgical abortion, a DNC, so which is also out of keeping with every other medical procedure that you could name. I speak to a lot of doctors regularly, and they're aghast, especially if they're unfamiliar with abortion protocol, that we can just remove informed consent policies. And that's not even going into removing informed consent about fetal development, fetal anatomy at each stage of pregnancy, not even getting into the issue of life, just basic biology. It's quite frightening.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be watching that closely, and we're grateful for your reporting, Gabrielle. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Up next on EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, advocating for life on the airwaves. We hear from our favorite speaker, Mother Angelica, on the importance of respecting the dignity of life at all stages. Her enduring words, when we return, stay with us.
I work for life. Because it's an abomination to God. The culture of death.
EWTN's foundress, Mother Angelica's strong and accurate words on abortion, constantly advocating for the protection of life throughout her work as a nun and as a television host. For decades, she helped spread the word of God. August 15th is the 43rd anniversary of EWTN's founding. We share with you now some of Mother Angelica's inspiring pro-life advocacy.
Once God has decided that you shall be, you are children of God.
Called into creation as a part of God's family, Mother Angelica's biblical references consistently reminded viewers that we are made in the image and likeness of God. In her pro-life messaging, she didn't shy away from the horrific realities of abortion.
By fighting abortion, so it means that anybody's conscience is more important, as unenlightened as it may be, is more important than a baby torn apart and burned black. We live in a mixed up world. Mixed up. So, you see what happens, my friends, when your conscience is not enlightened or informed.
She exposed the lies and hypocrisy of the pro-abortion movement.
People told you it was not a baby. They told you it was just a fetus. They told you have a right to a career. You have a right to have a good time before you start having children, before you're tied down. You have your rights.
And reiterated Catholic social teaching on the dignity of life.
You don't have a right. I don't have a right. Nobody has a right to call death on someone God has called to life.
Young or old, healthy or sick, life in all of its stages, she warned, are at risk of being targeted by a pro-death culture.
If we don't stand for the principles of God, you will be next. Because you're getting too old. You take up too much time in medicine. But change the wind of this country. Change the wind. If you don't, Lord, then we bow our heads and await. Await. For you to step in.
Mother Angelica's enduring words. You can always catch re-airs of her episodes right here on EWTN. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Follow us on social media to stay in the loop on the pro-life movement. You can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and Instagram. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.